time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Melton Out Loud. One of the big stories I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to, but it is significant, and that is what's happening with Turkey in their purchase of equipment from Russia and the impact of NATO and how that exactly is going to work out here. This has significant repercussions. We'll talk about that today, friends. Also, is the Trump administration fallen into the climate change trap? A lot of news, a lot of top stories here. And we will start here, friends, at the very top here with Dennis Santiago. He's an American strategist, philosopher, and patriot. Focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Ava Armstrong is here, a political commentator, radio personality, and an author. You'll find her books on the America Out Loud bookstore and in Amazon. And two of our favorites here for the top news here. We're going to start with Alex Acosta. And if you don't know that name, he's the Trump Labor Secretary. He's been doing a good job. President Trump has complimented him. He's really done significant, he said. And he started to come under fire a few days ago, and this was in relation to Jerry Epstein, the sex traffic case. Very, very edgy case, to say the least. At first, he wasn't going to resign. You know how these things work usually. That's where it starts, not where it ends. And he officially, on Friday, said he will bow out. And he doesn't want to be a distraction to the president, is what I'm assuming here. So, you know, was this the right move? Ava, was this the right move? Should he have resigned?
I think it was coming because, you know, Mr. Acosta gave a very long, lengthy press conference and answered multiple questions over and over again. And, you know, he really explained how that whole case came to be, but it wasn't going to satisfy the press. It wasn't going to satisfy the Trump haters. It wasn't going to satisfy Chuck Schumer and that gang.
Why is it once there's blood in the water? I mean, the sharks come quick, Ava. I mean, it doesn't take any time, right? I mean,
oh, yeah, it's a very ugly business. Here's the little silver lining for this cloud, as far as I'm concerned. I think the undersecretary is going to be even better than Mr.
Really?
Acosta. I do. I think he has better relationships or ideas for better relationships for President Trump with unions. I think he has a better inside.
Do you think he'll become the secretary? Do you think Trump will put him in the spot?
I do. I have that gut feeling. Yes, I do.
Interesting. All right. Dennis, you know, I thought initially that he might survive this one, that, you know, because these things happen like years and years ago, decades ago, and they seem to pull them out and then they want to hold people accountable for not making the right decision. It's funny how that, you know, works out in Washington, but I guess the writing was on the wall with this, wasn't it?
I think it was, the writing was on the wall from day one. And because this Epstein case is, I mean, it's a significantly large case with a lot of embarrassment. And so he's thrown himself on his sword, and I believe really for the good of the country. You know, I don't think this guy's a bad guy, and he understands that given that they're going to move forward with other parts of the Epstein case, that it's just going to get really, really ugly. So by getting out of the way now, it means that the country can focus on what happened with this guy and all of his associates and all of his conspirators and co-conspirators and even the Democrats know this is going to get really ugly.
I think you're right. He's seen what's going to come down the road here. Well, let me just tell folks as well that President Trump said when he was talking with Acosta out there to the press, he said, "This was him, not me, because I'm with him." Now, Trump has stated that over and over again, that he was with Acosta. Acosta could have hung in here. Trump then said, "I said you don't have to do this." And he asked him if he's sure. So one thing about President Trump, Dennis, he's very loyal. When you're loyal to him, he's very, very loyal back. Yeah?
Well, the guy was doing a good job. I mean, exactly. You know, the Department of Labor has been relatively quiet. I mean, it was a source of tumultuous problems during the Obama administration because the Department of Labor, you know, overstepped its bounds and created this thing called the fiduciary rule back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it roiled the entire market. So, but now under Acosta, the thing is it's running like a top. Relations are getting better across the board. And, you know, so... of course, it's not even just loyalty by Trump. It's like it's the administration basically saying this department is running well. You know, we like what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And now because of some external thing that's happened, they have to make a change. So, yeah, I think it's there's sadness all the way around. And I think it's actually a loss for the country that this guy has to leave a job that he's doing well.
See, that's exactly my point. And I kind of thought and had actually hoped at one point that he would have fought through because I knew Trump had his back at that point. But anyways, that does not appear to be the way it's going. Let's talk about Jerry Epstein a moment here. Officially arrested again for sex trafficking of minors. Now, the counts of this thing, this is a horrific case, as you just spelled out, Dennis. This is going to go deep, far and wide here. This one here is going to explode big time. And we'll see where it all ends up and how many co-conspirators there'll be with this one. But he was indicted on multiple counts of sexual abuse, child pornography, numerous other sexual crimes against juveniles. And the one thing that America comes together for is lowlifes like this. And I think this is one story that could eventually unite some people across the political aisles. However, right up front here, there's been a lot of pointing to Bill Clinton and President Trump, for that matter, as being an ally and a friend. And that's kind of where that started here. What do you make, Dennis, of the story here with Epstein? And the real difficult question here, I mean, and we don't know this right now, but I wonder if you have a speculation on it. Who really goes down? I mean, is it more than just Epstein? And where does the splatter happen on this one?
Well, so the Epstein, you know, so what's happened now with the Epstein case is that you've got all the old charges, but they brought new charges to the guy. And then the latest and newest charge, and which is really significant for him, is witness tampering. So apparently he's been trying to pay people off, but you know, he's got money. So he's been trying to pay people.
Right. You're right. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, probably millions in some cases, but I've seen those reports. You're right. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and then on the other side of it, you've got the press, which is trying to play spin on this. The press is playing damage control. Okay. And damage control, not just, so they've got Clinton, he's an easy mark on this because, you know, he's listed on the manifest of the planes. They got Trump because they don't like him.
By the way, one question for you with Bill Clinton was, did this happen before or after the cigar with Lewinsky, you think?
This is after.
Okay.
this is after. But here's the problem with this. And there's a lot of cover-up going on here. And the reason for the cover-up is because these people are running very, very scared because a lot of political careers and a lot of commercial careers are going to go down because of this because it's reputational risk. And here's the bottom line, okay, on it, you have to watch this about how the news is covering this. A lot of the people that were on those planes are in positions of power in the media.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Interesting. So there could, as we say, could there be a lot of splatter? Could be. Ava, this story here, I mean, this one has got to really anger you, I think, in seeing this. Jerry Epstein is a despicable, despicable character. And this is a classic for American fairy tales, how he used his money and influence. And beyond the stretch of anyone's wildest imagination, was able to skate this whole thing and get away with it, which is what actually ended up bringing the Acosta story down. What do you make of this truly, this horrific story that's really just starting?
I think it will be very similar to the Harvey Weinstein thing that happened, you know, in Hollywood. This Epstein guy, I mean, he's been doing this for many, many years. And there have been women who have been procuring young girls who are underage and bringing them to him. So I don't think it will just be Epstein that will be, you know, charged. I think there will be other women. There will be other people in his group there that he was working with. It's a despicable thing.
Yeah.
Trump, and let me just say this, President Trump had very little contact with this guy. And if you go back and look, he did come to Mar-a-Lago, but Trump kicked him out. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Trump is a ladies' man. Yes, he is. But he draws the line at they have to be of age or older.
Yeah, no, I've seen those reports where he was thrown out of Mar-a-Lago and that Trump really pushed him away. But he did comment at one point that he was dating young girls. Now, of course, young is a relative word, isn't it, now, Eva? We don't really know what that, you know.
Yes, and there's also been a bit of a shift in society in the last 10 years or so, okay. I would say. And a lot of these young women that have been utilized by Epstein, these young women are now adults, so they will come forward and speak right. very eloquently about what happened. And I think he's probably terrified.
Yeah, some of them are already starting to do that, actually. We're seeing that. And there's a lot more to come out, as you say, and they're trying to make it easier. I've seen reports where they're running advertising saying, if you've seen this man or know this man or been assaulted by him in any way, please let us know. And so this is just starting again. But, you know, I can never understand these kinds of crimes. And when you say women were bringing kids to him and all of that, it is beyond comprehension, I think, to most everyone listening to this program today, how anybody can do such deeds, such evil deeds against children. It's just, you can't really wrap your minds
just
around.
Just rotten to the core.
Yeah, that has to be. That's the purest form of evil, Eva. There is no other form of evil that goes this low. I mean, this really sinks pretty low. So listen, let's talk about this census a moment. It's another significant story this week here. And so there was a big push last couple of weeks here for the president to get the question on. And this question has always been on our census. It was removed in the Obama administration. Let's call it what it is, because that is a fact. And basically, you know what I can't get my arms around on this question, Eva, is that the idea of a census is that you want to count the citizenry and you want to know where to put people and where they belong and, you know, the districts, how big and how wide they are and how many representatives should be there. And it's really an inventory count of the country. But yet, one of the main questions that really you would think would be on a census is, are you a citizen, has become racist and controversial and really amazing. But at the end, Trump, he acquiesced on this thing. He said he backed off when people thought he wasn't going to. And he says he's going to use alternative methods for counting citizens. How do you think this works out?
I think that actually his numbers will be much more accurate doing it the way that he's planning to do it now. Mm-hmm. I think he got a group of people together at the White House and they explained to him there are many different data points that we can use. We have extremely good data now that we didn't have many, many years ago. So this may become the new way of doing the census.
Yeah, what you're speaking of there, and Dennis, I think what Eva is saying there, and I'd like you to comment on that, is I think we all know that the census, it can be very subjective, and whether or not they answer the questions, I mean, they don't put a gun to your head to answer the questions, basically. It's your prerogative to answer these questions. That's even if you get to the census and you open the door. So I think that, what she's saying is that there might be more sophisticated ways to do this. Well, at the same time, though, the press was calling out the president saying, nani, 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 nah, you lost. And he got a little irritated with that, I could see, and said, no, I didn't bend on this. I think Eva has a point. They talked to him in there and said, hey, there's probably a better way to do this. Why don't we go this way? Do you buy that?
No, I don't. I think he did lose on this one, and the reason for that is because while I agree that they're using other means of collecting information will give you a more accurate picture of where the citizenry is in this country, much better than the census could give you. The one thing it does not give you is the power to change congressional districts. It takes the census to do that. And the fact that the census is not going to have that question on it means it'll be another 10 years before we get to do that again. Okay. Yeah. And because of that, it means that congressional districts will stay static for another decade. And that means the distribution of power by the establishment will stay the same for another decade. That's the problem. And I think we lost on this one.
Interesting.
Oh, wait a minute. We can gerrymander though.
Yeah, but everybody gerrymanders, Eva, and the basis for being able to gerrymander, it goes back. The real question that is here is, what is the population distribution of the United States? We know where the population is as a total. What we don't know is where the population is of the citizenry, and because you draw congressional districts up on where the people that vote are.
Yeah, yeah. So I said it aligns everything, basically. Interesting juxtaposition you put into the program there. I think you have a valid point. I don't know how that works out. Would have been nice to have both, Ava, actually.
Yes,
definitely.
Best to have both, because then you could get the what the census collects and what science collects and compare them. And then you can make a proper assessment of whether or not there needs to be another way to collect the census.
But you know what?
We're in the blind for a decade.
You know, one of the things that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, came out and said about the president is that regarding the census thing, and I want to talk to you, expand this story a little bit. She says the president, Mr. Trump, is trying to make America white again. Those were her words, and boy, she is something else. So she injected race into this, again, with that simple question about whether you're a citizen or not, which really should have nothing to do with race as far as I can see. That's insane. To make that stretch and leap is absolutely absurd, no matter what your belief system is. It's insane. It's the purpose of the census. I mean, you got to understand that. So she comes out and calls the president a racist. It seems to me that this Democrat Party specifically, and people like Nancy Pelosi, they continually, I mean, at every chance they have, they use race as the cornerstone of whatever that conversation or topic or problem is. If they don't get their way or it didn't go quite right what they wanted, they blame it on race, racism. And it's mind-boggling how that works out. But here's what's interesting now. In a real switch to the story here in the last many days, there's been a lot of infighting in the Democrat Party back to race with AOC and Pelosi. And there's stories that come out that said, and you've seen some of these stories, Ava, but says she is a complete fraud, AOC, and the fighting in there, because she called out Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, and being racist. So now they're starting to eat their own. Which is the race thing. It's a kind of interesting switch on things, huh?
Well, Nancy's statement, you know, about President Trump's slogan, right, you know, make America great again. She's saying make America white again is his real point. And she's pandering to the blacks. That's what she's doing. She's pandering to people of color. Mm-hmm. She's trying to make herself kind of like a mini AOC in a way. She's taking a page out of her playbook.
Dennis, let me get a quick comment from you on this, and I need to change cycles a moment here. Does this end well, the subject of racism with the Democrat Party?
Oh, no, it does not end well. What is actually happening is they are, because of this comical way that they're doing it, they are driving the non-white population of the U.S. right into Donald Trump's hands for the 2020 election. These people are, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, Nana needs to understand that she is not Allie, okay? It's not just not going to work for her. It's the Obama circular firing squad prediction coming true. I mean, these people are trying to shoot each other in the back. They're sticking daggers in each other, and it's not going to do them any good.
The other couple of things here is these other stories were seen as the House Judiciary Democrats preparing a slew of subpoenas to go against Trump. Now, Ava, we've been hearing this from the very beginning. I mean, we knew that Nadler was going after all of them and Schiff and company, and trying to they've got the state of New York. They're trying to get into his taxes there. They're doing everything they possibly can. Now, I think there's a target on this, possibly. I think they want to pull all this information out prior to 2020, because I think this is all an election strategy, possibly. Do you think it is that if they can find some embarrassing information on the president just prior to that, that could be a windfall, Ava, don't you think?
I think they're going to lose badly in 2020. Precisely for what they're doing right now. They put all their chips on impeachment. Every one of them was on that.
It's a poker game. That's a good way to put it, because they're not legislating is what you're saying, right?
No, they're not doing anything legislatively. Mm-hmm. And what they're actually doing is they're making Trump a sympathetic figure, okay? Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of Democrats on my timeline on Twitter that have actually said very, you know, kind words toward Donald Trump, because nobody should have to go through this. And, you know, I think they're just helping Trump.
Interesting. Yeah. And there may be a lot of truth to that. Exactly. And did you see they've delayed the Robert Mueller circus up on the Hill?
Yes. I think Bill Barr, AG Barr, made a comment And it was to the effect that it's not too late for Robert Mueller to pull out of this interrogation. I think Mueller is going to really regret this if he goes before this committee, because you know he's going to have to answer questions from guys like Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows.
Yeah, well, and we've seen some of that. There's been a lot of conversation and posturing to that end. Dennis, with Mueller, this being pushed back, some people are saying it's not going to happen. And Mueller doesn't clearly want to do it. He's made that very clear publicly. But yet he's gone ahead and along with these subpoenas and what the Democrats are doing. It's all a bit of a fishing expedition, is it not?
It is a fishing expedition. And actually, I really wish I could be in on the a fly on the wall on the backroom dealings in this, because it's got to be like, well, what can we do? What can we not do? The bottom line here is they're trying to extend a line of attack that died about, a few months ago. And so it's kind of a zombie, really, when you think about it in political terms. The flag has come down off that
pole. Well, President Trump actually said, you know what Trump said to your point there? He said, you don't get another bite of the apple, you see?
Yeah, exactly.
What you said,
You know, chapter closed, move on.
Right, it's forbidden fruit at this point.
You know, Pelosi's beginning to move on. You know, she's got other problems now. And and so you got Jerry Nadler over there. And you know, I mean, you know, like, I actually the other day was described. I didn't call him Jerry Nadler. I said Danny DeVito, because you know just get this image of Danny DeVito playing the Penguin. I cannot get that out of my mind.
That's a good image of him.
It's that comical.
Yeah, he's not doing well health wise. You've seen some of the recent things on the Hill where he was sick. That Nadler is so something's not right with him health wise. I'm saying I've seen a couple of odd things happen there.
I'm impressed.
Well, they all could be depressed. That would make the whole city in trouble, basically, here. And, Avery, I just want one last comment on you about this story that I'm really over time here now as it is. But the court's rule on that President Trump cannot block people from Twitter. This is the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said the president does not, because it's an official Twitter account with the administration. Was this the right move from the courts?
I guess it has to do with free speech, so...
That's right.
I would say yes.
Yeah, I think that is the right answer, young lady. I was curious to see where you'd go with that. I was ready to fire back at you, but I think you got that answer right. Yeah, you cannot have it both ways. We cannot have free speech and then start to block people. It's an official feed for the White House, and you've got to make it available to everybody. So I think the courts read that one right. Okay, friends, big thank you to Dennis Santiago, Ava Armstrong. Up next, let's talk about Turkey, NATO. What's going on with Russia? This has major implications. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
This story has major implications for our national security, absolutely, and with future relations with Turkey. Turkey's in an interesting place right now, and it just is strategically, it isn't quite right there. It's very chaotic, and President Erdogan has had a lot of internal trouble in the country there. This story, what you're going to hear next, people, is one you want to pay attention to here. Let me invite on here and welcome on Michael Johns, who's the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. former White House speechwriter and policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. Dennis Santiago is a global risk and financial analyst, focuses on asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. So listen, the first components of these Russian-made S-400 missile systems have arrived in Ankara there in Turkey. And this gets interesting. There were some talks with the fact whether Turkey would follow through on this or not. There's been conversation about sanctions, that the U.S. had threatened sanctions, which would really spark a firestorm there with Turkey, clearly. And there were some comments that came out from President Erdogan on that and said, you don't do that with allies. You know, Michael, I think you would agree and say that Turkey is one of those unusual relationships when it comes to allies. That's kind of a tricky word to use. They are an ally, but in many cases, the relationship is quite complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, they are, as you correctly said, a longstanding member of NATO and have participated constructively in a lot of NATO-related initiatives and so have been valuable in that sense. They also have been very engaged in helping us in the development of our F-35 fighter jets, which are some of the most advanced in the world. And the threat here is that in acquiring this Russian system, mm-hmm. They technically will have the ability to basically reverse engineer and to otherwise discover the technical basis of that stealth nature of those fighter jets that we spent a long time developing. And that sort of intelligence on the system would almost render the F-35 incapable and meaningless in combat globally. So that's why this is a huge strategic threat. We've had a very rocky relationship with President Erdogan. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, points to what President Trump has been saying for many years now about NATO. And, you know, you kind of get to the question of, is this a country that's legitimately acting like an ally? They've jailed Americans. They have been engaged in systematic human rights abuses. They now are departing from longstanding national security and strategic obligations under NATO. And we value them, I think, as a NATO member. But this is raising, I think, a whole series of broader questions about what the ultimate purpose and role of NATO is in 2019 and beyond.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I've seen this coming for years now with Turkey. There's no question about it. President Erdogan is a difficult character, political character, to measure. So talk about the threats of this, picking up what Michael just said on this missile delivery system from Russia. Big threat, huh?
It's actually a major threat to the entire stability structure of the planet. So the thing about these S-400s is they basically make anybody that is flying what they call fourth generation or less, you know, non-stealth combat aircraft, obsolete, right? So it impacts all kinds of things. It means you cannot fly close to other people's countries if they're hostile to you, because once these kinds of systems get out, and you know, so the S-400 is the beginning of one, but these things tend to proliferate. So I kind of look at this as the S-400 is kind of the same thing as nuclear proliferation, because it undermines the entire structure of most of the world's air forces. And as Michael pointed out, on top of that, there's this thing where you take the missile system designed to try to go after things like F-35s in the long run, park on the same runway as an F-35. And what that does really, I mean, you know, let's be candid, right? You know, no military secret lasts forever, but should a military secret that is designed to keep things stable on the planet be allowed to degrade at an accelerated rate. And that is why Turkey becomes such a linchpin to this from a global stability standpoint. They could basically take what should have taken 20 years of gestation to equalize out a technology and reduce it to maybe 5. And, because people are going to look at this stuff. And politically or diplomatically, the fact that we are putting the the power to control the pace of that in the hands of the leader of Turkey, it just kind of boggles your mind.
So here's the real tough question. I mean, based on all of that, and I mean, there's really no surprises with what you say there. Does Turkey know what they're doing?
I think they did. I think they do. I mean, you know,
and what other, is that? What is that?
Well,
what are they doing?
Yeah,
do they know what they're doing? Yeah.
And Turkey has made a decision strategically for itself that, and you know, so we are hanging on to the thought that Turkey is still part of NATO, right? Turkey hasn't been part of NATO for a very long time. You know, this is kind of like a slow grinding negotiation for a really bad divorce, right? And but the fact of the matter is, Turkey has determined for itself that it wants to be part of this new club of Eurasian power that is not part of NATO. It's not the old Warsaw Pact, but it's a group of peers, and you know, and their closest peer in that world, in terms of both size of economy and interest, is Russia.
Yeah.
So they are gravitating towards what they see to be their natural next step of where they should sit in the world. We're the ones that are in denial that that's still happening. You know, they're like, no, don't leave. But the fact of the matter is, they've already left.
Yeah, no, bingo. There it is here. So, Michael, then, same thing here. So if Turkey knows what they're doing, because we're talking about a destabilizing force here that is, as you both stated, that's why I thought the story was so significant, because it's going to change. It's going to change the future. And Turkey knows this, but they're playing the cards for the future. There's a bigger signal as to why Turkey is doing this. That's what I'm trying to get to, that point. Why are they doing this?
Firstly, I think the S-400 is probably the most advanced anti-aircraft weapon system available in the world. We have our own Patriot system, which we offered Turkey and which they rejected, which is also a very effective system. But in the eyes of most experts, the S-400 is slightly more advanced in its capabilities. Russia has a lot of leverage right now over Turkey, and that's one of the concerns. Turkey also not just is purchasing this system, but they have offered their participation in the development of the next generation of the S-400, the S-500, which is very damaging. Now, what is the cost to Turkey in doing this? There will be undeniable cost. Number one is they will be kicked out of the F-35 program. So the F-35s that they'd already purchased but had not yet been delivered will not be delivered. They will not receive them. They will not be able to participate in the ongoing development of any future versions of advancements in the F-35s, which would be damaging to them. And as far as sanctions go, I think you'd presented the Erdogan quote that friends don't impose sanctions on friends. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether you agree with that or disagree with that, this is not even an option to the U.S. We have an existing statute that would apply in this case, under which participating members of NATO engaged in exactly this type of behavior are required to have sanctions imposed against them. So that could be immensely damaging to the Turkish economy. All in all, this is bad for Turkey and it's bad for the United States. I don't believe that Putin and Russia has any particular concern about Turkey's sovereignty or security. This is another step in his advancement of an effort to divide NATO, to ultimately even destroy NATO, and which has been a very calculated and sophisticated undertaking for at least since the end of the Cold War, even before then. It's part of that. And then it's also important to realize this S-400 has not just been delivered to Turkey. You know, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, UAE have either acquired this or in the basis of this. These are also three countries that may not be members of NATO, but which we've had close historical strategic relationships with. So this really is a kind of divide and conquer approach that's being utilized.
Well, that's it. And that's what Dennis pointed out. They're going after these tier two countries, and they're creating quite a merchandising, mechanizing stream. Russia is, right, with the S-400.
If our Patriot system, for instance, had been undeniably more advanced than the S-400, the S-400 would have had more limited appeal to Turkey. Now, you asked the most important question, and that is, what is Turkey up to here? Mm-hmm. And that's not exactly clear. But one of the things to consider is that there were components of the Air Force in Turkey that were part of that coup attempt. And so when you say, well, what is Erdogan looking to protect himself against, it could be actually, you know, ensuring that the Air Force is not going to provide air cover or other sort of support to any future coup attempt. That clearly has been a preoccupation of Erdogan in all respects.
And, oh yeah.
He's become increasingly autocratic in his.
He's paranoid. He's paranoid. I mean, clearly he's paranoid, and all the steps he's taken internally, you can see that he was afraid. He came pretty close to losing that poker game back then, as I recall. I remember the step by step. You know, the F-35 program that you mentioned here, that the purchase that Turkey had already done, Dennis, those pilots are already training in our country. They're here in America right now. By the way, those pilots are. And as Michael just said, well, that kind of nixes that whole thing. They're not going to be able to have that. So what do we do then? Nix the deal, throw the pilots out? I mean, that's going to be another really international scuff, isn't it?
It already is an international problem. And yes, and I think that is the consequence of what the Turkish decision is they have basically made the decision that they're going to exit the F-35 program because it just cannot be. There's just too much at stake for all the people on that side of things. I mean, bear in mind here, the proliferation of S-400s around the planet does not just put our Air Force at risk from future stuff. Like, it puts every Air Force at risk on this planet, okay? Right. Anybody that does not have a fully developed stealth fighter is in big trouble as these things start to pop up and you see little red areas on the planet going, can't fly there, can't fly there, can't fly there, can't fly there, right? And next thing you know, the big danger of this is that in response to these S-400s, which are fairly cheap to put out there, and Russia's making money on this thing, and Putin needs the money, okay? Mm-hmm. But the unintended consequence effect of this is it starts an arms race. Yeah. Everybody's going to need to upgrade their aircraft, right? And we're talking about aircraft now where 2/3 of the cost of the airplane is sophisticated electronics. That is, most people can't afford this.
On the sanctions, Michael, on that part of it, Erdogan said, he said, we heard from Trump that there won't be anything like sanctions. He said this coming out of Osaka, Japan. They talked on the sideline of the G20, as you may recall. And he came out and said that Trump assured him that there will be no sanctions. How does that work? Now, publicly, Trump has said nothing about it. Is that just one of those games again? Let's make a deal, or the art of a deal, and to see if he could call him bluff, or what's that all about?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the statute, because the statute is going to require that sanctions be imposed on Turkey. There's been enormous support for sanctions in Congress if Turkey does go forward with this acquisition. Sure. Congress is hugely, and this is bipartisan, by the way, this is not a Republican or a Democratic initiative. In fact, I think one of the better written things that I'd read on it was a jointly written New York Times op-ed a while back by a good number of U.S. senators. And they're really unequivocal that this is going to be the direction they go. And, of course, they made that threat with the hope that Turkey would come to its senses and not acquire it.
Exactly.
But they are acquiring it.
Well, I was hoping that would happen too in the past many years.
As far as the F-35 program, things are more advanced than even we're describing here. They've already removed the pilots from the program in Arizona, where they've been doing the training.
Right.
And I suspect those pilots themselves will ultimately be out of the United States. So that level of cooperation, bilateral cooperation on
has
the
already ceased, you're
has,
saying.
Has already ceased. Ceased.
Yeah, it's one other thing, Michael, I want to ask you. I mentioned to Dennis about the cost. Now, the S-400 is at least twice as cheap as our Patriot 2. Is that a factor?
I don't know if it was the predominant factor, but I'm sure it helped make it more appealing. I think there's larger strategic considerations here. Mm-hmm. And I think Erdogan is seeing a lot of value and benefit in closer relationships with Moscow. Okay. Which should be troubling. And Turkey, you know, I've been to Turkey numerous times. I mean, it's a very, the word unique is overused, but it is somewhat unique country in the sense that it's kind of part European, part Middle Eastern. It's kind of the bridge to the Middle East, and it's strategically located, a hugely important country, and have been viewed that way, you know, all the way back.
I mean, listen, Istanbul is east meets west. It's all there. It all comes in right there, man. And you know that when you're in Istanbul, you absolutely know that. So this is in, and one last question I want to ask you, Michael, but let me mention first to everybody, there is an incredible article you must read on the topic we're talking about right now that talk about the implications of what Dennis, Michael, and Malcolm are talking about right now. That is an absolute must read because it dives more into the future of what the possibilities and the dangers of what we're talking about, which we don't have as much time to jump into right now, but it's on America Out Loud, friends, and it's called Asymmetric Destabilization, Why the S-400 Missile System is So Dangerous. It is a must read.
Doesn't Turkey owe us a little more in the way of loyalty? And I think the obvious answer is yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to sum that up there. And Dennis, as far as, again, the impacts of this worldwide, that we are speaking about a story now that we could look back a few years from now and see the major implications of how it changed the world and how it might have sparked something that is more significant as far as a war on this planet.
And short of war, I think what we are really going to see in the next, probably in the next decade, is the emergence of another block of power in on this planet. The block of power will essentially extend from Moscow all the way down to Saudi Arabia, and it will be marked with S-400 installations that go basically down the western coast of Eurasia.
Read the article, people. Get up to speed on this story. More Viewpoint, friends, in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Couple of other big stories, people on climate change here. One of the stories that got overshadowed again this past week because of the level of news and so much of it is that Democratic lawmakers have declared a climate emergency. And so this included, by the way, six presidential candidates. And they did this just this past week here. They unveiled a congressional resolution sweeping reforms to stem a dangerous rise in global temperatures. Non-binding resolution. And of course, at the head of this is, you know who, Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Greenhouse-Cortez. And Senator Bernie Sanders is another one. The mad scientist there, I guess, you know. And so that's this is in response to the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And it talks about the escalating temperatures. Let me bring on here now Dr. Jay Lair and Tom Harris. Dr. Jay Lair is a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition, former science director of the Heartland Institute. Tom Harris, executive director of the Ottawa, Canada-based International Climate Science Coalition. Thank you, gentlemen, both for being here. And okay, so Dr. Jay, as far as this climate emergency and them doing this, more, I guess, would you classify this as important for people to understand, or is this more just public theater?
Well, Malcolm, it's definitely public theater. And frankly, while I admit to being an eternal optimist, I think this is the stupidest thing they could ever do. I think the entire country is under a situation of climate change fatigue. They're sick and tired of it. And I think anybody with common sense would understand that their claim that we have some kind of climate emergency because of warming is absurd. They've got to remember that the old deal was that we were worried that in 100 years we might be a couple degrees warmer. now they're saying that in a decade or more, we're going to be too hot to enjoy our lives. Everybody goes south on vacation. I think common sense is going to be coming to the surface. And the more these Democrat nuts do this, I think ultimately it's going to hurt them very much. And the president recently had been considering having a real science debate between scientists about climate change. Mm-hmm. And he announced this past week that he's not going to deal with the subject until the election. I think it's a really smart thing to do, not to get it off the front pages, not to have the scientists be saying anything in a debate that the liberals can attack every single day. I think this idea of a climate emergency is going to work against it. The facts are that man's contribution to carbon dioxide through automobiles and power plants and factories is zero. It's zero. And they're trying to say it controls the thermostat of our planet. It's ridiculous. I don't think too many people in the public who are not liberals and leftists will buy it.
Yeah. Tom, Jay puts out the good discussion right there, the points on this administration and pushing this back after the election. Let's talk about the everyday man and woman and what they get. He mentioned fatigue, back to climate change specifically. You know, and also the other thing Jay says there is the number that hits in my mind is zero. Now, let's get to the core of what do people really need to understand about why this is a real escapade here, this whole climate change debate? I mean, it's not even a close argument, it seems. Every time I read up on this, it doesn't seem like they have any logic, facts or data they're presenting. Tell me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the public need to understand that climate always changes. We're not climate change deniers. If anything, we deny that we deny climate change, so we're denial deniers.
I like that.
Yeah. But, you know, climate changes all the time. Otherwise, where I'm sitting right now in Canada would have 2 kilometers of ice over my head. So historically, the kind of climate change we've seen in the last 150 years is very, very small. I mean, we're talking about slightly over 1 degree Celsius in 140 years. And during that time, carbon dioxide has risen something like 40%. So obviously the atmosphere is not very sensitive to carbon dioxide. And, you know, that rise in CO2, partly because of us, partly because of nature. I mean, these are things that are going to happen, but we're still way below a level of CO2 at which plants thrive. And of course, that's why they pump CO2 into greenhouses to triple the CO2 level.
I was going to say, Tom, and that's another point you and Jay have presented before to me. Let me remind people, without CO2, without all of this, we wouldn't have a green environment, would we?
No, exactly. And you know, this Democratic representative, Blumenauer, he says in the article describing the climate crisis they've described, to address the climate crisis, we need to tell the truth about the nature of this threat. Mm-hmm. Well, Jay just told the truth about the nature of the threat. The threat is essentially zero. I mean, there is no threat from human-induced carbon dioxide.
Interesting. All right. Well, there you go here. The other big piece of the story now is and there is a really very interesting read on America Out Loud from Dr. Jay Laird, Tom Harris, Trump administration to miss most important climate change conference of the year. And this story was, and just to show you all why I think this is important, because they, in this particular case, have called out the Trump administration. What's happened is they're not attending this particular climate change conference. Now, you might say, why? Well, as they'll explain in a moment, it's put on by the Heartland Institute. It's to put all the facts and data in front that really showcase what Tom just talked about and what Jay said, the fact that this is not a risk. This is being used to profit and propaganda that is put out there for their own power, prestige, and that's what climate change is all about right now, people. It's become a very political hot potato conversation. But what's interesting here with this story is you guys go on to say that it's a huge loss that the Trump administration is not attending, since the ICCC 13 will reveal that neither science nor economics back up the climate scare. Speakers will explain that this is one of the greatest scandals in history. And Jay, in this article here, you guys talk about the fact that as you look at President Bush and President Obama, and of course all the presidents prior, including Trump, you point out here, have sent representatives around the world to all of these conferences in Japan and Poland and just Paris, Peru, everywhere. They've traveled the world, and they've talked about, and we've sent a lot of money. I mean, you spell out the money here. It's really interesting how much money we spend nationally. And that's to go to all of these high-level climate change conferences. But yet they're not coming to this one, which, Jay, happens to be at the Trump Hotel, which is right down the road. What is it about this one?
Well, the funny thing is they've actually used the fact that it's the Trump Hotel to say, well, they shouldn't be padding the coffers of the Trump organization. They've actually used that for an excuse of not going. But what it really proves, Malcolm, is that the deep state, the progressives, the leftists that were put in total by Obama and even some by Bush beforehand, really control this sort of thing. Again, I'm really not that disappointed. I mean, the less chance they have to pick apart the actual facts, the better. It has nothing to do with science. Their goal is to remove the use of fossil fuels from the world, bring us back to the 19th century in lifestyle, and then install a totally socialist government to be a nanny state. As things get worse and worse, the public will look to the government to take care of them. This is the plan, and they just decided on this. They could have just as easily decided that the mining, the extraction of fossil fuels was going to reduce the force of gravity, and that in a few decades we might be floating off the surface of the earth. They could have picked any hoax or wow. Ruse. They just happened to pick carbon dioxide, and it was not a very good choice because the impact is zero, and I'm very confident that the majority of the American public are going to wake up to this soon enough, certainly to give Trump another 4 years in office.
I love your analogy about the gravity. That kind of tells you the insanity of it all, Tom, you know, when he puts it out there. That really is remarkable, particular example here. What do you think about this conference? Should the Trump administration be there?
Well, yeah, I disagree a little bit with Jay on that. I think at the very least, Andrew Wheeler, the head of the EPA, should send some representatives to at least hear it and show that they are paying attention to both sides of the debate, because, you know, that's critical for any political leader. They should be listening to the whole story when they make decisions. But at the very least, even if they're not there, let's hope they're at least watching online, because anybody can do that starting at 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time on July 25th. All they have to do is go to heartland.org and they can watch the live stream event. So there's no excuse for them to not be very familiar with what's going on, even if they're not there personally.
Let me correct myself. My point is that while they're, sure, Tom's right. I mean, they should go. My point is it doesn't really matter in terms of what we are hoping to convince the public ultimately that this is the biggest hoax. Really, I think, Malcolm, I think it's the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on society since man walked the earth.
Yeah.
It's certainly the most expensive. I mean, we're talking about $1 billion plus a day being spent on climate finance around the world.
Jay, you talked about emissions a moment ago here. You were speaking about that. And there's another point I want to make, and or at least clarify me on this if I'm wrong, please, because I'm not totally positive. But isn't the United States, isn't this country, from what I understand anyways, the most successful country in reducing emissions of all the G20 members, and also those signatories of the Paris Accord?
Yes, there's no question about that. And that's simply because we scrub our smokestacks when we have coal power. We've gone so big into natural gas, which has very few carbon dioxide emissions. So we are low. Frankly, I don't think that's a good thing. You made the point before that we need carbon dioxide to live at 150 parts per million. Vegetation dies, and then ultimately we die as well. When at the end of World War II, we were at 280, we were really starved then. We've increased it now to 410, and it's a good thing. Africa is 24% greener today than it was 30 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm hoping, for the sake of all of agriculture and mankind, that I live long enough to see it go over 600 parts per million. It's all good.
You know, I'm really taken back by this point, Jay. I'm really, honest to God, taken back. And here's what I find so moronic. The one principal point I pulled from you guys, I've learned a ton from both of you, by the way. I'm sure everybody has. But I got to tell you, the more I've learned about the value of the CO2 and the value to our environment and the value to our life and our living and our breathing and who we are. And what's ironic to me is that the perpetrators of climate change here have taken the one thing as to what we really need to keep the planet green, and they're using that to try to change what they really should have no business changing. I just find this, it's beyond intelligent.
Yeah, it's really like something out of 1984, because you know how in the end of the book, they have an appendix which was describing newspeak and how the government would choose language to coerce the thinking patterns of the population. Well, you know, when they say green energy and they talk about low CO2, well, that's the opposite of green energy.
Exactly.
Green energy would be high CO2, you know, and when they say carbon pollution, well, that's not right either, because carbon dioxide is not carbon and it's not pollution. And they talk about global warming crisis. Well, no, if CO2 does cause a bit of warming, which it probably does to some extent, that's actually a very good thing, because if you look at human history, we've thrived during warm periods. It's cold times when we had, you know, famines and wars and all sorts of things, when crop failed. I mean, so the warming and the CO2 buildup are both great for society and nature.
Doesn't this prove, Tom, that they're really not paying attention to the facts and data to understand the argument?
Well, it's hard to know whether they are personally ignorant or they're just assuming the public are, because the whole whole language of the debate shaped in such a way that, you know, if we're not careful, we end up calling it carbon and things like that. And many people on our side, even the Republicans, are now at times with this new ACE program, which is replacing Obama's Clean Power Plan, they're calling carbon dioxide something that has to be controlled still. And of course, the reason for that, Malcolm, is because this thing called the endangerment finding is still on the books. The EPA judged that carbon dioxide was dangerous to human health and welfare. So as a consequence, the government's hands are to some extent tied. They actually have to go ahead with CO2 reductions and some sort of regulations because of this endangerment finding. So, you know, Sterling Burnett from the Heartland Institute explained it very clearly last week. He said to me, look, as long as that endangerment finding exists, the Trump administration has to have a CO2 reduction plan. So the thing is to get rid of that. They have to reopen it and use the NIPCC reports, in particular biological impacts, which shows what Jay was saying. CO2 is a benefit to the environment, and it's not driving dangerous climate change.
There you go. Last word on this, Jay. So where does this all go? You see the push on the left, the socialist movements, as you say, the new green deals, the dollars, and the propaganda just this past week about this other resolution they're trying to put in there. What's the end game in all this? Where does it go?
Well, we live in a world of Alice in Wonderland. Everything is really upside down, and the public will wake up one day. I think it's going to stay in a status quo with the crazy Democrats screaming emergency over and over again. I think Trump will be reelected, but it will end in a way. Solar scientists are totally convinced that we're moving into a cool period. We have a solar minimum, which means virtually no sunspots that we're seeing. And this is an indication that in the next decade for sure, we'll see a cooling and we'll have to get ready for it. But these crazy people will say, oh, the cooling is due to the burning of fossil fuels. They will not be happy until they destroy the Constitution and our way of life. Going to win this battle. And when Trump is reelected, he'll have 4 years to really straighten things out. And he has science totally on his side.
Interesting. Wow. What a great conversation, Dr. Jay Lehr, Tom Harris. Big thank you, friends, to all of our people. What an incredible show. Think about what you just learned from Jay and Tom about this topic that you would not have known otherwise. Again, all of their articles are on AmericaOutloud.com. You can read all kinds. I mean, you want to be informed on this topic, people? Go there and look up Dr. Jay Lehr, Tom Harris, and see all of the content and the interest in conversation, the topics you'll see there, truly, truly amazing. Also, thank you here to Michael Johns, Dennis Santiago, Ava Armstrong, all of our people. Big story about the turkey thing you've learned today and so many other news stories. Friends, thank you for being part of the journey here at The Viewpoint. And remember, it's time to get involved and get loud.